Hey everybody, Tim Evanicki here with The College Audition, back again with another episode of The College Audition Podcast, here today with my special guest, Bill Jenkins, full professor and chair of the Department of Theater and Dance at Ball State University. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Excited to chat.
So, Bill, we like to get to know the person before the program first. So, first, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your career and the series of events that led you up to your time at Ball State.
Well, I'm actually a proud alum of Ball State in addition to being the department chair. So I started off here as a student back in the 1990s, graduated with a degree in acting. I actually got my first master's degree from here in communication studies, learned how to be a more effective communicator and writer during that period. Then I went on to Illinois State University, where I got my MFA in directing at Illinois State, and worked at length in the Chicago theater community during my time there, as well as at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. I taught at the University of North Dakota, a very cold place, where I was for about a year, and then a position came about, an entry-level position here at Ball State to coordinate the musical theater program. And I came back to Ball State in 2000, coordinating musical theater, and then, thanks to a series of very random and strange events, was asked to be the interim department chair at the very young age of about 29 years old, which I agreed to do, thinking to myself, you know, there's no way I'll do this beyond a year, and 20 years later, here I sit. So it's been quite a ride for me, to say the least. But I'm you know, very proud of my affiliation with Ball State, and very proud of the, you know, the 30 plus years that I've had some sort of connection to it. I'm also a professional director. I direct, you know, across the country, regional theater. My primary area that I tend to do is musical theater. That tends to be my greatest love and passion, and you know, I've directed part of the, you know, Society of Directors and Choreographers, and I'm a proud member of that union. So I've had a very, very, very good life, and have been very proud of what we've been able to accomplish and are accomplishing here in this job. And I'm also the proud dad of two beautiful children and my wife Sarah. So we're very lucky.
Oh, I love that. So when we're talking about the Department of Theater and Dance, which degrees, which performance degrees do you offer there?
We have BFA degrees in acting, musical theater, dance, and design and technology. And then we also have BABS degrees in theater education, something called theater creation, and directing and stage management. But in terms of performance degrees, in terms of what many of the folks on the podcast will be looking at, we have acting, musical theater, and dance.
Beautiful. So for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to focus on the acting and the musical theater degrees today. And you seem to be the most qualified to give us the elevator pitch, which is what I do at this point. Put our guests on the spot a little bit, 60 seconds or less. Why should people be considering Ball State University for their performance degree?
I always say that we are at Ball State really interested in recruiting talented people, but we're more interested in recruiting great human beings. And that's really what it comes down to for me. I think one thing we've learned in the pandemic was being in rooms with people that when we missed that, when we lost that, we realized the importance of being in rooms with people that we really want to be in rooms with people with, you know what I mean? We don't want to be in rooms with difficult people. We don't want to be in rooms with people that ultimately are not the kind of human beings that ultimately we can connect with, that are kind, that are giving, that are generous, that are smart, that have a worldview. These are all things that I think at Ball State we are invested in more than anything. We want to create triple threats. We want to create acting majors that have the ability to do film or television work in addition to stage work. But really, in the end, what we really want are to create artists who have the ability to take the world, the work that they do, and make the world a better place. That's really, to me, what sort of separates us from many other programs. I'll also say, in terms of an elevator pitch, we have just been given in the last year the money to build a brand new performing arts center, which is a huge feather in our cap. We've been fighting for this for years, and it's going to be an extraordinary facility that's going to be right in the center of campus. So any student that comes to our program is going to have a chance to basically open and be a part of a brand new two theaters that we'll have in the middle of campus, which is terrific.
Before we dive into the program, let's talk a little bit more about that, because that's really big news. What's the timeline on that opening? And tell us a little bit more about, you said two theaters. What else is going to be in there?
So we have had a extremely supportive upper administration for many, many years. But one of the things that we always were struggling to sort of get were facilities that we felt like were more indicative of the quality of our program. And so through the course of the last several years, we have a village area in our downtown, sort of right next to campus area, that is in need of a revitalization. And so this brand new theater complex is going to be coupled with a hotel and a restaurant, and is actually going to be a sort of a catalytic converter for this new renovation that's going to happen with our village. And this facility will have a proscenium theater that'll have about 450 seats, state of the art, along with a black box that'll have capabilities of about 200 seats. It will be top of the line technology for our students that go into design tech, but for our performance students, it will be facilities that we feel like will really allow them to highlight the work that they're doing. We do a pretty aggressive production season in terms of the amount of shows that we do. And we also are really invested in making sure the students get an eclectic experience as they go through the program, so that they're, you know, musical theater students aren't just doing musicals, and acting students aren't just doing acting shows, and same with dance. We try to make sure that, you know, all of our students are getting an opportunity to work in multiple venues with multiple types of material. We don't want our students to leave here only having done ensemble work in musicals, or only having done the same role in plays multiple times. We really believe in this idea of what we call pedagogical casting, which is giving you an eclectic experience over your time, so that you have done an understudy assignment, you have been in an ensemble, you have played a role of significance, and you've done a variety of kinds of material. I think the new facility will allow that to happen in ways that it hasn't been able to, maybe to the extent that we would like to up to this point, only because we've been dealing with facilities that limit the, you know, the total number of students so we can maybe have in a musical based on just size of the, you know, costume shop and what they can do, and size of the makeup facilities, things like this. This will give us a chance to really expand the size and scope of what we're doing, which is really awesome.
Wow. That's really exciting. Looking forward to seeing that come to reality over the next couple of years. That's
me
amazing.
Me too. I said to somebody, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's been 20 years of my life fighting for this, and I've got it now. And now it's like we got to actually build it. So it's pretty exciting.
So we normally talk about this later, but it seems appropriate to talk about it now. But so what types of venues are you in now? Where are your performance spaces? What do they look like now?
So we have a university theater, which is like a 400 seat. That's where we do primarily one play, one musical, and one dance concert each semester. And then we have a studio theater where we traditionally do two shows each semester, usually plays, sometimes smaller musicals. We've done in that space play, you know, musicals like Fun Home and Songs for a New World, shows that are a little bit more sort of smaller casts, not as big of orchestras. And then we have a student-generated space that our student directors work in, where a lot of our student actors and musical theater performers will perform. It's called The Cave. It's actually getting a brand new renovation as we speak right now. So it'll be a facility that will be newly renovated when students arrive on campus in the fall of this coming year in 2023. And that's a space where we do about six shows a year, three each semester. They tend to be smaller pieces. We've done things down there like title of show as well. So it's a place where you can do music, but mostly it's smaller plays. And then we have a space that's over in our dance facilities that is a sort of a space where we've done dance concerts that have catered many times to musical theater students. We did a history of musical theater, jazz, you know, sort of like jazz and musical theater dance concert. We've done a hip hop concert over there. And it's a space where we can, you know, deal with about 200 audience members, as well as casts that range anywhere from 12 up to 25. So, we've got about four facilities. With the new renovation, we'll be down to probably three facilities, but all of them will be new facilities that actually can accommodate all the things we've done now, just in one less space.
Great. All right, well, let's dive into the programs now. Let's start
Sure.
with the BFA acting program. So here I am, my first year in a BFA acting program heading toward Ball State University. When I get to campus, what does my first year look like?
We really work very hard in the first year to we act first of all, I'll say this. We put our acting and our musical theater students together in the performance classes, the acting one and the acting two class that you take in your first year. Again, because we believe that all of our BFA programs must have storytellers. And so by that, we also mean we don't want there to be a different style of acting for our acting majors than our musical theater majors. We believe that good acting is good acting regardless. And so because of that, we put our students together and we also want them to build community from the beginning. So if you're an acting student, you're taking a class in acting in your first semester. You're also taking a class in, we have all of our acting students take an intro to singing actor class their first semester and a dialects class their second semester so that they sort of get a chance to sort of look at how they can do plays with music, even if they're not a singer, because we think that's really important, again, making them as versatile as possible. And with dialect work, we know that a lot of the production seasons that we have dialect pieces, and we want to make sure students get a sense of sort of introductory dialect work right from the get-go. They will also, students will also have classes in sort of like a physical conditioning class if you're an acting student. Kind of yoga, Pilates. That's a class that happens early in the morning. It's sort of like a acting boot camp, if you will. And it's a class that I think the students really respond well to. We talk about actors as athletes a lot and sort of making sure that they understand the real rigor it takes and the real sort of discipline it takes to do the craft on a regular basis. Students also in the second semester will of their first year take an intro to voice and movement class. So they start to learn the basic premises of voice and movement before they take a sort of second year of full voice and movement in the program. So it's really sort of in our first year, what we think of is we're laying the groundwork for students to understand the things that we value. We value storytelling. We value actors being extremely vulnerable and grounded in a place of real genuine sort of believability. We try to take out what we call the sort of baggage, the suitcase baggage of sort of the tricks that actors maybe have developed over years, tricks that ultimately work in many cases. And we may go back to those things when the students get to be seniors, when they understand how their sort of craft works a little bit better. But we try to make sure that they sort of get away from the things that they may have done in high school a lot that may lead them to more, I would say, blown up sort of performances as opposed to just talking and being real. We also have a series of classes that all of our students take, which are really important to us. The first is called Art of Storytelling. It's a class that all students take in their first year. We just talk about storytelling in general from all perspectives. In your second year, you take a collaboration class. That's a class in how do we work with other people? This is a discipline that relies so heavily on interacting with others, and we talk about that. And then we have a third year class that's sort of art and society. How do you make a difference in the world, and how do you take the work that you're doing in the classes and have social impact? That's really important to us. And then the fourth year, the culminating class in that is we do a sort of a sort of a culmination class that it's sort of each discipline specific. So for the acting students, they do one person shows. And those would be shows that ultimately they develop from scratch. We do a performance of those at a venue that we get in Indianapolis that all the students get a chance to get. For musical theater students, they get a chance to do a cabaret that they do in Indianapolis and then take to Joe's Pub in New York City. So these are sort of like things that we feel like students are building to for their 4 years. The other thing that I think they'd get in the first year, they also have classes like, stagecraft they take in their first year and things like that. Sort of what we call the general theater and dance core classes that they take. But in the first year, really what we're aiming towards most of all is building community, looking at the habitual things that ultimately may have been places where actors lived in high school that we're trying to get them away from, and also giving them an understanding of the things that we value as they move forward and move into the program over their next 3 years.
Beautiful. So, just so I was following that, because we jumped back a little bit between acting and musical theater, then back to
Sure.
acting
Yep. Sorry.
on
Sorry. Yeah.
it's
It's fine.
okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to take notes, but I gave up. So can we go back to year one musical theater? Let's talk about how that's what additional courses those musical theater kids are taking. We heard a lot of the what everyone takes as well. So just talk to us, I guess, on what's separate or different than the acting students that the musical theater kids will be taking their first year.
In addition to the acting one and acting two class that they take with the acting students, the musical theater students will take a section of sight singing, a section of basic musicianship, and a section of piano each of their first two semesters. So we really want to lay the groundwork for the musicality that's important in our, in our program. We think of the department as training not triple threats, but quadruple threats, because we think musicality and music in general is a huge part that's sometimes overlooked in programs. As the culminating class is a cabaret class, we often talk about the fact that we want students to be able to arrange. We want students to be able to create cabaret shows. We want students to be able to sort of create their own work. And we feel that that sight singing, basic musicianship, piano work helps to make that happen. Students also are taking in their first year ballet in general. They take ballet classes. Some students may also take jazz in their first semester if we feel like they're not able to go to the level of jazz that we have them at in the curriculum. But they will all take ballet, and then in the second semester, we incorporate jazz classes for those who are more advanced students, and they take jazz classes that ultimately will be leading towards their sort of for a second year, which tends to be more musical theater dance, which is what happens in the second year. Students are also taking a voice lesson. The voice lessons are with, we have six primary voice teachers in our department. Those voice teachers have studios that range anywhere from 8 students all the way up to 18 students, depending upon the teacher. If a teacher is just teaching voice, they generally have about 16 to 18 students in their studio. And those voice lessons are 45-minute voice lessons with a 15-minute accompanist time, as well as a 2-hour master class that meets with the entire studio over the course of the week. So it's basically 3 hours worth of training that's happening in voice over mm-hmm. each week that the student's here.
You mentioned with dance that if students aren't quite up to the level, or if they're more of a beginner, you put them in a class to help them there. What if a student is coming to you and they're exceptionally advanced in dance?
Because we have a BFA in dance, all of our dance classes are by placement. So if a student comes in and they've been dancing for their whole life, they would go right into intermediate ballet, which is what our BFA dance majors take. So it is not out of the ordinary. In fact, it's quite normal for those who are exceptional dancers in musical theater to move right into the intermediate and upper level classes and dance with the BFA dance majors.
Beautiful. Talk to us a little bit about how toward the end of the 4 years, both for musical theater and for actors, how do you help them with the transition into the professional world as far as a showcase or any classes about business of the business or anything like that?
So a couple things I'd say. First of all, we have a class that's called Senior Experience, which is a class that all students take, which talks about things like, how do I find a place to live? How do I do my taxes? How do I sort of transition into the quote-unquote real world? And that is a class that's taken by all students, but then it has breakouts for different groups. We also then have an audition class that's taken by all BFA performance students. And that deals more with when you're dealing with, different regional theaters across the country and understanding where regional theater is popular and how students might navigate that, and doing sort of workshops that students get with guest artists. We have this period of the next month in that audition class where we're bringing in Zoom interviews with people like Ann Bogart's coming in, and artistic directors down at the Alliance, and we have the artistic director, the new artistic director at the Goodman is coming in, along with professional actors and professional musical directors. And it's basically about 14 guest artists that come into the audition class over the course of 7 weeks and do a session with each of those classes to sort of give them a sense of sort of where their area of expertise is. And it's also about building connections for our students. We want them to have a chance to meet these people. We also obviously bring people to the campus on a regular basis. We have faculty in the senior year that are part of what we call our industry faculty members. Those include Rachel Hoffman, who's a fabulous casting director with Telsey and Company. She's cast MJ on Broadway. She has cast Can't Come From Away on Broadway. And she actually directs our New York Showcase. She is our New York Showcase sort of person. She's a Michigan graduate. She has a great sense of sort of the New York community, the touring shows, and has been a huge benefit to us as we go and help our students navigate going to New York, for those who go to New York. We also do a showcase in Chicago. That is organized by William Osatek. He's a Joseph Jefferson Award-winning director in Chicago, for many years was the artistic director at Drury Lane Oak Brook in Chicago. He comes in and works with the students in Chicago and helps them navigate that specific showcase. We then also do a LA experience. We don't do showcases anymore in LA, mostly because, as was told to us by multiple people, showcases in LA are just not really what is needed, because what they really need to see is work on camera. That's really what the folks out there want. So what happens with LA is, and I will say this about, this is different for us than other schools. We do three showcases, one of the few undergraduate programs in the country that does three, but you also audition for all the showcases. No showcase is guaranteed. No showcase is given to any student. We don't pick the students either. The guest industry faculty members come in and make the selections. So what we guarantee students who come to our program is three professional auditions prior to leaving campus with industry professionals who can help connect you in the real world. Our culminating experiences, as I said before, are the one-person shows, which every acting student gets to take a part of, the cabaret performance in both Indianapolis and New York, which all of our students get to take part in. Agents, casting directors, they're invited to that as well, and many times students will sign based on people going to the cabaret and seeing them there. But the showcases themselves are cast by these individuals. LA is a smaller group. It's like 6 to 8 students generally. And that group actually does pilot auditions throughout the spring semester of the senior year. So Eric Emery, who's a terrific manager out in Los Angeles, and Billy Murphy, who's a casting director in Los Angeles, they come in and select that group of students. And those two individuals submit our students for pilot auditions throughout the spring semester of their senior year, which has led to many of our students actually booking pilots that they've been able to do literally as they're finishing out their senior year, which has been a huge benefit for us. And it's a great way for us to hopefully be that bridge builder as students get ready to go into the real world.
It sounds like that's one of the most built out showcase programs of any of the schools that I've spoken to so far. That's really incredible.
We worked really hard to try to make sure that it didn't feel just like a senior trip, because ultimately in the end, whether a school has, my opinion is, and it's all this is obviously my opinion, but my opinion is it's not whether a school has a showcase. It's a, because if they don't have a showcase, I think you really have to question the value of going there. The question is, who comes to the showcase and what's the deliverable on the showcase? For us, we average about 85% of our students signing through the showcase process, because our students have already been pre-vetted by the individuals that we bring in. Meaning, if I say to somebody, you really need to come to our New York showcase, they're like, great, that's Bill from the middle of Indiana. I may know Bill, but I don't really know Bill in terms of my world. But Rachel Hoffman, who's casting on Broadway, calls and says, boy, there's this kid you really need to see in our New York showcase. They're exceptional. That's going to bring agents, casting directors, and other individuals there. And so for us, that's really important that we give students actually viable showcase experiences.
Mm-hmm. Now, the pandemic taught us the importance of all performing arts people to know how to conduct themselves in front of a camera. So can you talk to us a little bit about what sort of film offerings there are?
For our acting students, they take an acting for the camera class that is taught by our new faculty member, actually Mark Cabus, who's a terrific actor and has a thriving film career himself. That acting for the camera class is taught in conjunction with our Department of Telecommunications, which is actually funded in large part by David Letterman, who is a graduate of Ball State. and is a very big supporter of our program and the university on the whole. The students do a lot of joint film work so that they're collaborating with their peers over in telecommunications to create sort of small short films that they're working on their junior year, which can be then used for whether it's student Emmy Award competitions or different sort of film festivals that students will submit for. The audition class, which is taken by musical theater students and acting students, has a great deal of sort of on-camera work related to commercial work. Get going in and doing sort of, basics for pilots or films or things like that. That happens in the audition class. The camera class tends to be more about the nuances of doing what I would call regular TV, sort of like you're doing a 30-minute sitcom, you're doing a, you know, it's an hour-long drama, how that process works, and also working with independent films and working with directors that are not necessarily theater people, but they're more telecommunications people who understand storytelling, but understand it from a different perspective so that students understand how that relationship works. Our musical theater students can take the camera class if they can fit it into their schedule. A lot of it comes down to what it is that they want to have as additives. For those students that come in, they're like, I have to dance, extra classes, that's really important to me. Taking the camera class and a lot of additional dance classes may become a scheduling challenge. Same with students that say come in and say, you know, when I'm a senior, I'd like to musical direct a musical in like the student-directed space, or I'd like to work with the folks over in our MMP program, our music media production program, because I am interested potentially in going into making my own original music, which a lot of our students may do. It's about picking and choosing in that senior year and second semester of junior year what you really want that extra space in your schedule to look like. So if you pick camera, that's great. If you pick the extra dance classes, it's great. If you pick working with the music folks, that's great. But doing all three of those things becomes a little bit of a there's only so many hours in the day conversation, especially as they're sort of navigating all the other things that they have to do. So we really though do work to make sure that the camera is a critical part of what our students are doing.
Beautiful. And speaking of there only being so many hours in the day, can you speak to us a little bit about the ability to either minor, either within the performing arts department or outside of, because I know that BFA programs are generally packed as far as credit hours go.
So at Ball State, our BFA programs are 85 credit hours each, and that's coupled then with the 35 hours that you take at the university. So it's 120 hours total. But I will say that many of our students, because if you average that out, it means the student would be averaging about 14 or 15 hours each semester. Most of our students will end up doing minors because that's important to them. They want to do a minor in business. They want to do a minor, maybe in some other area. Like a lot of our students who are involved in theater and dance may do like a music minor if they're really interested. Like some kids have come in and they play instruments, so they want to do an instrument minor. That stuff is all totally possible. You get an advisor the minute you step foot on our campus, who's a freshman advisor. But we also have a departmental advisor who's only dealing with theater and dance students, Anna Peace, she's just terrific. And she'll navigate and put together an 8-semester plan so you know exactly what you have to take when. Right from your first semester here, you'll start to be able to craft that program. We also have something called the Honors College, which is something that a lot of our students want to do, which is kind of like doing a double major in essence, although the way we've navigated it with the Honors College, because of a lot of the extra things that have to happen, a lot of the things they do in the musical theater or acting programs can count for that extra stuff that you do in the Honors College. So our students can do the Honors College as well, and that's something we have the highest number of Honors College students at the on Ball State's campus in our department. So we have a very high percentage of students who do that, not just because we value it, but also because our students really are smart. And the Honors College provides with it not only a lot of different kinds of classroom experiences, more what I would call less general large survey classes, more smaller intimate conversation based classes. The one thing about that is there's also a lot more financial support that comes from the university for that Honors College admission. And so we work to make sure that that's possible for our students.
And you mentioned an alum, David Letterman. There's a couple others that I know of, but I want to hear from you. some other names or success stories that you might have to share with us.
Well, I'll start by saying this, and I always say this at the get-go because I think it's important. I think that we champion a lot of the alums that I'll say in just a second who are New York, LA based, that may have thriving careers on film and television or in on Broadway. But for us, we value the alum who happens to also be working now in the state of Indiana just as much. We are not about sort of like tiers of value, if you will. That's really important. I just want to say that from the get-go. We do have some extraordinary alums to me who have really, in the last especially 10 years, really made a name for themselves. Kayla Davion is just played Tina Turner in the Tina Turner musical on Broadway. She's been in multiple shows in New York. She was in Waitress. She was in King Kong. She is an extraordinary artist. Kirsten Hodgins is currently working on Six on Broadway. Again, another extraordinary talent who we're very, very proud of. Erin Neufer, who's an acting, one of our acting graduates, was in several New York-based shows, was just in the new Julia Child TV series that was out and has a thriving acting career. Ryan Whittle is a graduate from a little bit longer ago, but Ryan Whittle did multiple shows in New York, but really is best known for his film and television work. He's done lots of films, and he's got a thriving career. And he's also become a huge voiceover artist, which is something that we continue to work to make sure our students have that skill set as well. We currently right now, I think, have about 17 alums on national tours that, you know, range from, and they're all, many, most of them are in principal roles. One of our graduates, Evan Duff, is doing Frozen right now, the national tour of that. We have several students who are working overseas and national tours, or I guess international tours of Hairspray. We have one of our alums just got into the sixth national tour, Terica Anthony, another extraordinary talent. And she has certainly made a name for herself. Ren Rivera is one of our recent graduates. Ren was just in Between the Lines on Broadway and off Broadway. And they are just an extraordinary talent after they had done right from school, walked right into doing the Alanis Morissette musical. And so we just have been very fortunate to have a lot of terrific alumni who are working and flourishing in New York and in Los Angeles. We have a lot of great students also in Chicago. Chicago is a thriving theater community where a lot of our students are working at the major houses there. Tim Kaine is one of our acting graduates who has been a regular at the Goodman Theater in Steppenwolf and Chicago Shakespeare for years and has one of the most sort of well-respected careers in the city of Chicago, as does John Lister, another acting graduate. And then lots of students that have gone into the big houses, Marriott, Lincolnshire, Drury Lane, Oakbrook, and Chicago Shakespeare, among others, and certainly the Paramount, that have been really some of the stalwarts of Chicago's musical theater scene for many years. So we're very proud. We've got a lot of them.
Now, I know this was from before when you were running the program, but I cannot believe you overlooked Janet from Three's Company.
Oh, my gosh. Joyce went. Yes, Joyce actually came in. Joyce is great and a really a lovely human being. And I would say that Joyce has been somebody that we've really gotten an opportunity to spend time with. I have over my time, and she's been great. I'll also mention a couple of those older graduates. Doug Jones, who was in The Shape of Water and is known as the most sort of popular creature. He was just in the recent, I'm so bad with titles of things, the Halloween movie with Bette Midler that just came out. The
Hocus second. Pocus.
Hocus Pocus 2.
I am Doug Jones. Shocked.
I know. I'm terrible with names. It's the worst. But he was. What is the name of the tall guy that's the most popular? He's one of the creatures in Hocus Pocus 2 that was in the first one and the second one, and he's got a name.
The zombie.
Yeah, that's Doug Jones. So, yes.
What is? Oh my gosh.
Can't remember his name.
That was Bette Midler's love, or one of the. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, he was in, again, Shape of Water. He was the primary creature in Shape of Water that won the Oscar, and so he's amazing. And then, while not an alum, certainly somebody who is an alum to us is Sutton Foster. We have been extraordinarily fortunate that Sutton has worked with us for the last 12 years. In fact, when she came and first came to campus in 2010. she said, you know, look, I don't have an alma mater. And so after being here and meeting all of you and spending time, you're it. So whatever you want from me, whatever you need from me, I'm your person. And she has delivered in so many ways. She's directed shows here with me. We've co-directed a couple of productions, Drowsy Chaperone and Shrek, together. She teaches classes for us. She regularly comes when she's not doing Music Man with Hugh Jackman. She regularly comes to campus. She's also put us in contact with people who have become huge parts of our program. Michael Rafter is her musical director. Michael Rafter is now full-time on our faculty. He just and is currently going back and forth between New York and Muncie because he's musical directing Funny Girl on Broadway. And he is music directed Thoroughly Modern Millie and Violet and so many shows. And then Megan McGinnis, who was in Little Women with Sutton on Broadway, is teaching our cabaret class. Last semester, Sierra Boggess taught it. So we have been very fortunate that Sutton has been generous to us financially, but also more so generous to us in terms of what she gives to us on a regular basis through her humanity and her ability to teach and really resonate with our students.
That's awesome. That's so great. And like you said, quite a feather in your cap to have that name attached to you. That's so wonderful.
She's made it. She's made the program has sort of took a huge step forward once she started her affiliation with us, and it's because she believed in us, and I'll never take that for granted, that's for sure.
So let's talk a little
So
bit more about student life and where the school is in Muncie. Talk to us about what there is to do in the area. Students always, leave campus every now and then. So talk to us what that's like.
one of the things I'll say is that we know we're in the middle of a cornfield, and we embrace that we're in the middle of a cornfield by bringing people to the students. So what I also think is really beneficial about our location, though, is we're close to a lot of different places. We're close to Louisville, which means, and by close, I mean it's a couple hours drive to get to Louisville for Actors Theater of Louisville. It's a couple hours drive to get to Dayton, where they have Human Race Theater, which is a great theater. Lots of our students go to Indianapolis, where Indiana Repertory is one of the best, I think, regional theaters in the country. And they also have great, thriving, smaller based theaters there. And a lot of our students obviously go to Chicago on a regular basis. It's about a 3.5 hour drive. Muncie's about 50 minutes from Indianapolis, 50 minutes to the northeast from Indianapolis. The campus community and the Muncie community in general is a campus or a community that was built in the sort of early part of the century in manufacturing. A lot of that manufacturing has gone away as sort of economies have changed. But what we have been very benefited by here in Muncie is we also have a huge hospital that's part of the IU health system. So we have great hospitals, and we have great sort of new, what I would call more white collar industry that's moved in, which has helped us with a lot of the industry that's built in. We have a very nice, what I would call thriving downtown area in Muncie that has been sort of rejuvenated over the last 10 years. Lots of great restaurants, lots of great places to go and sort of hang out, bars, things of that nature. As I said, the Village area, when I was talking about the new Performing Arts Center, is one of the things that I think we're most excited about making more thriving moving forward. And I think the Performing Arts Center is going to have a lot to do with it. Students many times will, during the weekends, we're a Division I campus, so we've got football, we've got basketball, we've got sports. We have our volleyball team was a Final Four volleyball team this past year, so a lot of our students would go to the volleyball games. It was a lot of fun. I went to a lot of them as well, and they were just great, and our team was terrific. And I also think that the students spend a lot of time dealing with sort of just the campus as a whole. It's a beautiful campus. It's a safe campus. And it's a campus that gives the students a lot of opportunities to sort of do things that they really want to do while they're in college, aside from what they came to study. It is not an urban setting. There's no doubt about it. And we tell that to students when they come, because I think a lot of times students, need to understand that there are trade-offs no matter where you go. I always say that in an urban setting, you get everything. The problem is sometimes because you have everything, you can't focus on one thing. And here in a rural setting, what you get more is you get things certainly that you can do on weekends, and we want our students to get away. We have a very strict policy that we have no Friday and Saturday rehearsals because we want students to have lives. We do not want them to be in rehearsal on Fridays and Saturdays. We want them to actually get that balance between work and life. We think that's really important. But we also know that, you know, students have to focus on what they're here to do because they're not going to be able to go and audition for, you know, a national touring company that's a block away. They have to actually, if they're going to do that, which a lot of our students do during weekends and will take, you know, time away to go and do those things, it has to be that they are making that conscious choice and that they are disconnecting for that period of time from the work that they're doing on campus. But I think most students would say that the social life here is what you would want for any college campus. Mm-hmm. It's thriving and it's, I think, a lot of fun. And I think it's in an environment that everybody feels great about.
And what about any student organizations or activities that are sort of ingrained into Ball State?
We have actually, in our department alone, 12 student groups. So every time I start mentioning them in meetings, I'm always like, which one am I going to forget today? Because there's so many of them. But we have an improv troupe. We have a group that is called, oh my gosh, I can't even believe I'm forgetting their name. BSU Backstage, which is for our design tech folks. We have a extraordinary group that is specifically dedicated to our BIPOC students. And they basically are focused in specifically on sort of inclusive excellence and how that work manifests itself with the students. That group is incredibly active. And they are sort of really holding us to account, which is something that's really important to us as we go through and have gone through the last several years. We also have an extraordinary group called Alpha Psi Omega, which works diligently. It's an honorary fraternity sorority that is theater-based, and that group works on sort of opening nights and works on fundraisers for things like Equity Fights AIDS and things like that, so that we're really working to sort of create that socially conscious atmosphere that we talked about earlier. But there's really something for everybody. We have a green theater group. I mean, there's just a lot of different groups that, and the group that I was talking about earlier is called Artists for Inclusivity, by the way. And that group is again, tremendously active with things that happen in the university community as well as the Muncie community. Mm-hmm. So lots of student groups.
It sounds like that you have quite a lot of groups focused on social justice and making change in the world, and you've mentioned that a couple of times. So I wanted to know if you wanted to maybe speak on that a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, when everything happened with the George Floyd murder, obviously there was so much happening in the world at that point with the pandemic, but it was a real eye-opening moment, I think, for all of us. And one of the things that I worked really hard to spearhead, and I give all the credit to my colleagues and my students and our alumni who really were at the forefront of this. But I said that from the beginning, we have to be proactive and not reactive. And one of the ways in which we did that was to create a action plan for the department that we published and is still on our website from June of 2020 that was basically, this is what we're going to put into motion. No excuses, no statements about support that were empty because there was no action behind it. And so as part of that, certain things we've already implemented, we implemented a student advisory group that is made up of about 30 students from across the department that meets with me on a monthly basis that brings challenges, issues to the department that ultimately then I can know are happening so that we don't have lingering problems. This included things like, I'll give an example of something that was really important. A group of students talked about how many times in the hair and makeup classes that we offered, there was a different level of expectation from students who were BIPOC compared to students who were white based on the fact that there were less examples and less designers who were BIPOC that could talk about how you deal with particularly hair issues in students who are a part of our African-American community. So we brought in guest artists specifically to address this. We also have worked to bring guest artists to campus who do shows that we are doing that are more BIPOC-centric. As an example, we're doing a production of Sweat in the spring semester. That's a production where we're going to bring someone in to specifically do the hair and makeup for that because we feel like that's important. These are things that the student advisory group brought us. But in addition to that, we also did things like we put a sort of a directive that 60% of our shows must be authored by BIPOC, LGBTQIA, and female voices in our entire production season. So no more dead white guys only. It had to be something that ultimately was reflective of the world, but also was reflective of the stories that our students, our faculty, and our alumni, and the community want us to tell. We also talked a great deal about the curriculum. How does the curriculum reflect the world we're in? We added a basically what I would call a social justice, social issues, dramatic literature class that students take that varies. Right now we're doing a class in trans theater. There'll be a class in a sort of the female gaze that's going to talk specifically about looking at plays and musicals from a particularly female-driven perspective and how a lot of authorship can potentially be problematic for more of the sort of female audience members and female actors. So we're really working on trying to make sure that we're activating ideas, not just saying we're really going to care about that, but actually showing students through deliverables that we put our money where our mouth is. We also have something that's very near and dear to my heart. I mentioned Kayla Davion, one of my favorite alums we've ever graduated. Kayla's a 2017 graduate. When she left, she was like, I want to give back. And she started an alumni ambassador program. That alumni ambassador program is made up of BIPOC graduates from the Department of Theater and Dance. And what they do is they're in our auditions with us when we're auditioning students. So if any of your podcast listeners were to audition for us, there'd be a BIPOC representative from the alumni ambassadors who would be a part of that audition experience. They are also there to gauge whether or not students may be auditioning but may not have had the requisite training to help them be competitive when they go through the auditions. And they actually provide free coaching, mentorship, training for BIPOC auditionees that may need extra work and may need extra assistance in finding material and looking at what it is that they should be focusing in terms of who they are and the kinds of things that would be sort of indicative of what they should be presenting. And we don't do that because it's all about being a recruitment tool for Ball State. We do that because we know the world has a particularly problematic divide between those who have the resources to get the kinds of support that they need from these training programs that exist specifically to get students ready for college auditions versus those who don't have the resources. And so we want to give back by helping those students that don't have the resources get just as viable and valuable a training so that they can be competitive in what they do. So these are the kinds of things that we really have been working for, and it's at the forefront of everything we do in the department.
That's so wonderful. That's great. Speaking of college auditions, let's switch gears now and talk about the audition process, which is why most of the people listening to this are probably listening. They want to hear how they get in. So talk to us first. The first question I always ask, of course, is do you pre-screen?
We do not.
And this is for, I should mention too, since we're talking about two different degree types, you don't pre-screen for acting or musical theater.
Nope. We know it puts us into a, what I would call, challenging situation by the fact that we have so many students auditioning for us because our numbers tend to be very high. But we purposely don't pre-screen because we want to interact with the students. And we don't think in a pre-screen experience we get a chance to really know the student. We really want that audition face-to-face, even if it's on Zoom, that opportunity to have a conversation because that's really important to us.
And so walk us through the application process then in order to secure that audition, and then we'll go from there.
So we are, for the first year this year, we're part of the Common App. I will say that the Common App has challenges for us that we're starting to face at Ball State. One of them is that a lot of the students are finishing the Common App and then not doing the secondary application process they need to do for the department. But basically, whether you apply online or deal with the Common App, there's a secondary application that you're filling out for the department, and that specifically has to do with where you're going to audition or where you would like to audition, what areas you're interested in, etc. We have an extraordinary recruitment coordinator. Her name is Andrea Sadler, and she has a team of students that help coordinate all of the things that we do. We take part in the unified auditions, so we'll be in Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles this year and have been there every year for the last 12 years. We do also do campus auditions. We do 4 campus auditions throughout November, and then in February we do 3 weekends worth of auditions. And in addition to going around to high school theater festivals where we do auditions, and several other auditions down in Texas and Louisiana and places like that, along with Illinois, Indiana, close places. But through the process, all of it is about getting your application materials into us through that supplementary app. That's really important. While we don't demand that students apply to Ball State before they apply to the program, it's very complicated for students to not apply to Ball State and try to apply for an audition slot. We do walk-ins at Unifieds if we have space. We tend to have more space in the acting auditions than we do in the musical theater auditions because they tend to fill up very quickly. I think that process for the Unifieds have already started in terms of the applications and the timing. I know that they started that, I think, just recently, and it's already starting to fill. So I would suggest students get their stuff in as quickly as possible. But
when you're mentioning locations, is there also a virtual option? Because you mentioned Zoom earlier.
Yeah, there's some virtual options that we do, and that can all be found on our website. If you go to bsu.edu/theater, you can go and see all the different locations that we have that will allow for all the different options of auditions that exist.
When they walk into that audition, are you behind the table?
I'm behind the table many times, not all the time, but many times. I'm usually, I go to Unifieds in Chicago this year. I hadn't gone the year before because I was actually at the time acting in a production of Violet that we were doing here, so I wasn't able to go. But this year I'll be going to Chicago, and I'll also be going down to Texas. We're going to Texas in a week and a half to the Moonified, so I'll be going down to that. And then we also will do a variety of different, like I said, high school theater festivals around the country. But those are the two primary places I'm going this year, in Chicago and in Texas. Typically, if I'm not there, in acting, it's usually always Drew Vidal. He coordinates our program, and Eva Patton, she's our primary faculty recruiter for students, and she is sort of coordinates all of our recruitment efforts in terms of a faculty perspective. Eva will be in the acting room in New York and in Chicago, and then Drew will be in LA. And then Michael Elliott and John Ottavianini are our two coordinators for musical theater. They're co-coordinators, and one of those individuals would be in the room if I'm not there. So we have a lot of people that we spread out. And then Michael Rafter, who we mentioned earlier, our musical director for Funny Girl, is actually going to Chicago this year as well, which I think will be great. It's always funny when students come in and they're like, you know, I'd like to play, you know, he also accompanies. That's what he does. He plays piano. So they'll typically put, you know, Gimme Gimme or, something like, you know, something from Violet in front of him. And they're like, do you know this? And he's like, yeah, I'm good to go. I know it. But it's always great for the students to get a perspective of all the different faculty that we have in the different areas.
Yeah. So what are you asking students to prepare when they come in the room?
Traditionally in acting, we're asking you to prepare 2 contrasting monologues, usually no more than about 1.5 minutes in length each. We don't insist upon classical material, but we always want you to do that if that's something you feel comfortable with. I always suggest to students that they have anywhere between 4 to 6 monologues that are backups, just in case. I think having somewhere around 6 or 7 pieces in your back pocket if you're an acting student is important. There's an interview that happens as well as the monologues, and we try to work with students too. We don't just have students come in, do their pieces, and leave. We will tend to do a work session as well, which is why our time slots tend to be a little longer maybe than some other schools. In musical theater, you'll do a dance audition. We take a dance faculty member with us to New York and to Chicago for those dance auditions. We usually have an alum do it in LA. And then we will also then look at having the students have 1 monologue and 2 songs. Traditionally, we'll have a student start with 1 song and then we may ask for the second, but you should have 16 bars if it's a ballad, 32 bars if it's an up-tempo in the singing, In for the vocal selections, and then in terms of the monologues, we ask for somewhere around a minute, minute 15 seconds for the monologues. Again, we also want students to bring their book with them. Many times we'll be like, let's just give this a whirl and see what this is like. So the more material that students feel comfortable with, both monologue and singing perspective, we always want the students to bring that material in.
And so, other than obviously the material, what are the things that you're looking for? What is going to separate a student, or put them in that pile of, we are definitely interested in this kid?
We bring a lot of current students and alumni to the different locations, and or if we're on campus, they're obviously here to help us with the auditions. And the number one thing that I will say is we care about everybody's opinion. So when I say that the minute you step foot, whether it's in the hotel in Chicago or on campus here, you're auditioning. And I don't mean auditioning like you should be fake. I mean auditioning like the way you treat people matters. So for us, if a person walks in and nails everything and we found out that they were a jerk in the hallway, they're off our list. It doesn't matter how good they are. So that's the first and foremost thing I would say. We're really looking for directability. We're looking for students who are willing to be brave, take chances, in terms of when we work with them. We want students who ultimately understand that the material that they select is a reflection of where they are now. I always say, I thought I knew what it was like to be a 40-year-old when I was 18, and I had no idea what it was like to be a 40-year-old. As I approach 50 now, I can't imagine trying to tackle that when I'm, 18, 19 years old. So pick material that right now you feel like is you, and find the material that ultimately you can just connect with another person in. We're not looking for the person who can emote or scream or yell. We're looking for the person who can just be as connected and as simple and as grounded as possible. And then in the vocal material, we want stuff that you can sing on your sickest day. Don't come in and try to do things that obviously are so like right at the cusp of what it is that you can do. We just want to make sure that you're showing that you have a healthy instrument that has the ability to maneuver and manage lots of different things without becoming damaging to you, because we believe in healthy singing. That's really important. We do not want our students to come in with already note problems because of they've been singing ineffectively for years. But I would say the person is the most important thing to us. It's like, and you think, oh yeah, that's just Bill saying that. It's true. Like, we want people to be talented, but we will always choose the student who may have raw skills but not developed, have talent but maybe not be quite there, who's a great person in the room, than we will the student who's rock and roll as a performer and just not the best person. We just will always choose that other person.
Yeah. You mentioned the word interview earlier, and that is terrifying my students
Oh,
right
yeah.
now. They all seem to be so worried about this interview that's going to happen as part of the audition process. And I keep trying to tell them to not think of it like it's an onstage question at a beauty pageant. It's not something that you should be memorizing answers to in advance. It's your opportunity to show them that you're not only a good singer, you're not only a good dancer, you're not only a good actor, but you are someone that they can stand to be around for the next 4 years. And the way to do that is to just be yourself and answer. So tell us what the interview, this scary interview is that you talked about that you do during your audition.
I mean, I can tell you, I'll give an example for anybody who listens to this. They'll have a leg up if they walk into the room. One of the questions I always ask is, tell us something about you that makes you unique, that has nothing to do with performing or theater. Something that you that or something that you like to do that has nothing to do with theater. Why? What speaks to you? What are your hobbies? Things that ultimately, you made the comment about they want to be with people in a room. I always say, do I want to see myself in a room with this person for 6 weeks? Because that's what every director will ask when they are casting is this a person I want in my room? And that means a person who you can have a conversation with, who can talk to you about sort of things they like and things they don't like. They're human. They have humanity. They're grounded. They're genuine. They're real. As opposed to you feeling like it's a constant interview or feeling like it's a constant sort of like I have to give you my resume as we're discussing things. We're not interested in any of that. We don't care about that. There's nothing on your resume that's going to make us go, oh my gosh, this is more important than everything else. We have to take this person. We're more interested in, tell us about you. Tell us about your family. Why'd you get into theater? What is it about theater that you like? What kind of stories do you like to tell? Those conversations to us help show what's really underneath. And that's the hardest thing to gauge in 8 to 10 minutes when you're with somebody, is that part, because it's all so regimented. It's like you were asking, how long can the auditions be and what's happening? And, you know, there's so much of it that's that 3 minutes of just tell us about yourself, or, you know, we'll ask students to say, if you had to pick of the three areas, singing, acting, and dancing, the one where you feel most comfortable compared to maybe where you feel least comfortable, how would you rate those and why? And, you know, things that ultimately just give them a sense of being able to talk without feeling encumbered by, like, I have to impress. Nobody wants you to impress. We just want you to talk.
Great. That's great. And I'm so glad to hear that what I've been telling my students is supported by actually one
100%,
of the schools.
100%. Absolutely.
Bill, before I let you go, tell us how, if students are interested in learning more about the program, how they can find more information.
bsu.edu/theater. I mentioned earlier, we're also on all social media platforms, BSU Theater and Dance on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. You can go to all of our social media apps, and we do on our social media apps a day in the life. So you can see a musical theater student on Instagram take you through, this is what it looks like for a day in the life of a sophomore musical theater student, or I'm a senior acting student and this is what it looks like for a day in the life with me. That is a way for students, I think, who are prospective students to really start to think about what it would be like to be at Ball State. I also think you can find a lot of information online. We have, you know, I always say, do your research before you come in, know a little bit about us, know a little bit about the programs that you're auditioning for. And I think that you'll find much of that on our website and social media platforms. But I also would recommend to students, and this may be something to just, is it just a general note, if you're really interested in a program, find somebody that's in the program and just befriend them on social media and start asking questions. Any program that doesn't want you to talk to students in the program is hiding something. I'm paid to tell you to come to Ball State. I believe it, but I'm paid. But if one of my students said, don't come here, trust that student, don't come here, because they know.
Well said. Bill, one final question I always ask everyone before I let them go. What's something you're looking forward to? Here's my interview question for you.
I am really looking forward. We are doing a production of Into the Woods that opens on Friday that I've directed. It's the first time that I've acted Into the Woods twice. But it's the first time I've directed it, and I got a chance to co-direct it with my colleague Didi Batiste, who's an extraordinary acting teacher, and she's currently at the Goodman. She's playing the role of Frida, which is the new Fred role at the Goodman. So she was not here; just started rehearsals last week, so she's missed the last week of as we've been prepping. But Didi is an extraordinary artist; happens to be an artist of color, and we co-directed the show together. And it is an Into the Woods unlike any that I've ever seen. Mostly because I let Didi take the reins and sort of said, you create the world that you want us to, sort of the playground you want us to tell this story in. And it's a playground that I never would have done myself, but it has been extraordinarily fruitful in the fact that you learn how really powerful Sondheim is no matter where you place him, and getting a chance to tell this story at where I am in my life, but also where we are as a society at this point, right after his passing, is something I'm really looking forward to.
Wonderful. Well, Bill Jenkins from Ball State University, thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to having you back around here real soon.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye.
For more information on the exciting training, workshops, and resources we have to offer at The College Audition, please visit us online at www.thecollegeaudition.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.